But I get to travel around the country and I get to tell stories, some amazing stories. Some of those stories are not just about the black-robed regiment. Sometimes I get to stand over by the bookstore or the book table along with our little museum, and I get to tell other stories. Stories that most people have never, ever heard. 4 years ago, 2019, I preached a sermon that many of you did not hear because in those days you were not attending. Our church has grown significantly since then. And so in thinking about what would I preach today, I kept coming back to this. And with your indulgence, if you were here, I would like to preach that message again for the fear that many have never heard the stories that I'm about to tell. In fact, I'm convinced that most people in this country have never heard the stories that I am about to tell. Now, you may be saying, well, what in the world are you going to tell? Well, I'm going to tell the stories of some of our founding mothers. I mean, where would I be without the faith of my mother? Where would you be without the faith of your mother or a grandmother or a great-grandmother? Well, I'm here to tell you that we probably wouldn't exist were it not for the faith of our founding mothers. Now, we've all heard about our founding fathers, right? I mean, we can start rolling off names, people like James Madison and Benjamin Franklin and George Washington and John Adams and John Jay. But few of us, if any, know anything about our founding mothers. Now, I'm not going to be talking necessarily about the wives of some of the founding fathers, but what I would like to tell you today are select stories of women who stood in the gap when liberty was hanging in the balance. And since they were willing to be so faithful, we have enjoyed the freedom that we have today and the opportunity to preach and teach the gospel openly without fear, without being censored, unless you're on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube or Vimeo or some of those places. But we are here and we're free because of the faith of our founding mothers. So with your indulgence, I'd like to begin. I want to talk about women like Mary Hayes or Prudence Wright. I'd like to talk about women like Margaret Corbin. See, probably for most of you, you've never heard these people's names. And yet these women did incredible things, and you owe a debt of gratitude to them as a representative general thank you for the faith of all of our mothers. But let's begin first with this woman right here. Her name is Deborah Sampson. You say, well, what is so special about Deborah Sampson? Well, she actually served for 17 months in the Continental Army as a man. She called herself Robert Shirtliff. She disguised her identity because in those days, a woman could not join the army. Oh, she was not a modern-day transsexual. She simply believed that everyone had to do their duty. So she disguised her identity and joined the Continental Army. She fought at numerous battles, particularly she fought at the Battle of Yorktown in 1781. In 1782, because remember, the war wasn't really over until 1783, she was wounded on the battlefield with a musket ball into one of her thighs. To keep from disclosing her identity and everybody finding out that she was really a gal, she extracted the musket ball herself from her own leg. Can you imagine that? That very same year, another soldier named Richard Snow was placed into her care. And so the both of them were trying to recover. He was wounded worse than she. They housed her in a local man's house by the name of Abraham Van Tassel. They only found out later that he was a Tory. Now, for those of you who know what the Tories were, they were Americans who sided with the British and were considered turncoats and often were quite brutal to those fighting for liberty. Had she known that Van Tassel was a Tory, I'm sure she would have never stayed in his home. To show you the kind of ill treatment that these Tories would dole out to Americans fighting for liberty, he allowed her and Richard Snow, these two wounded soldiers, to stay in his attic. Well, that wouldn't have been so bad if we're talking about March, April. It was August. When was the last time that you spent any length of time in your attic in August? This is where they had to live. This is the only way they could survive. She cared for this soldier named Richard Snow until finally he died. She eventually recovered, left Van Tassel's house, found out that he had actually been hosting gatherings of other Tories, gathered up some soldiers, led a raid on his house, and arrested 15 Tories in the process. Where would we be without women with the courage of someone like Deborah Sampson? She was eventually honorably discharged because they never really found out that she was a woman until after the war. So she was honorably discharged in 1783. The faith and courage of founding mothers. Or how about this story from the Battle of Monmouth Courthouse, New Jersey, fought on June the 28th, 1778. You see, during that battle, a husband and wife team were manning a cannon. They were fighting in 100-degree weather. Now, I want you to think about that for just a moment. Think of what it is like in Oklahoma when it's 100 degrees. Now, place yourself out on a battlefield where you know that any minute your life could come to an end. You're working a cannon, which by definition gets really hot when you fire it multiple times, so hot that you can't touch the barrel. You're steadily swabbing it, trying to keep it cool enough to be used and clean enough to be fired, and grabbing ammunition and throwing it down the barrel of this hot weapon. Well, there was this man's wife named Mary Ludwig Hayes. Now, you may not have ever heard of Mary Hayes, but I bet you've heard of Molly Pitcher. Because you see, Mary Hayes had been going out onto the battlefield in between helping her husband William service that cannon with pitchers of water. In fact, it was not uncommon for women at different battles throughout our War of Independence to take water to the soldiers, both those fighting in desperate need of a drink and those who were wounded who really were in greater desperate need of a drink, because when you're bleeding a lot, your thirst gets worse. And so over the years, these women were kind of clumped together under the term Molly Pitcher. But it is believed that Mary Ludwig Hayes is the original Molly Pitcher. So here she is out there on the battlefield when her husband falls to the ground. It is not known today whether he fell of heat exhaustion or whether he was mortally wounded. But you know what she did? She kept right on firing that cannon. In fact, one of the soldiers who was just a young man years later wrote his memoirs, and he included her story in those memoirs. Listen to what he wrote. Joseph Martin said, "A woman whose husband," his name, of course, we now know was William Hayes, "belonged to the artillery and who was then attached to a piece in the engagement, attended with her husband at the piece the whole time." So we're talking about a cannon here. "While in the act of reaching a cartridge and having one of her feet as far before the others as she could step," so she's reaching out like this to grab another cannonball to shove down the barrel, he says, "a cannon shot from the enemy passed directly between her legs without doing any other damage than carrying away all the lower part of her petticoat. Looking at it with apparent unconcern, she observed that it was lucky it did not pass a little higher or it would have created more problems, and continued her occupation." So I want you to get this now. Here's Mary Hayes, now known as the quintessential Molly Pitcher, who reaches over to grab some more ammo, and as she does, a cannonball whizzes between her legs, tearing off most of the bottom of her dress. Her husband lying there on the ground, probably dying. What would we do without the faith of men and women, but especially these founding mothers like Mary Hayes, known today as Molly Pitcher? George Washington actually saw her in action and wondered who she was and asked around. And when he found out who she was, he gave her a battlefield commission. And from that time on, she was known as Sergeant Molly. What would we do without the faith of our founding mothers? Have you ever heard the story of Nancy Hart? Nancy Hart lived near modern-day Augusta, Georgia. Get this, she was 6 feet tall with crossed eyes. The local Indians called her War Woman. Now, I've heard some of you guys, you may know a War Woman too, but this is a different War Woman. So the local Indians called her War Woman. She fought at the Battle of Kettle Creek, February the 14th, 1779. While her husband was away with other men taking care of important matters, she and her daughter Suki were kind of, I don't know, invaded by five Tories. They came to their house, no men around to defend them, and they came in and insisted that she cook them a meal, especially wanting meat. She said, "The only thing I have is my one old tough turkey." They forced her to kill that turkey and prepare it for them. So as they sat there eating her only turkey that she had prepared under duress, she was willing to serve them all of the liquor they wanted. And so they began to drink lots and lots of liquor, and she had a plan. When they were soused enough, she began to gather up all their firearms, and they were just so silly, they didn't realize what was going on. And she put them together where they couldn't quite get to them. Eventually, they end up out in the yard. In the process, she had sent her daughter down to the well with a conch horn. And she said, "You blow on that and your dad will hear it and those other men and they'll come running." Well, in the process, these Tories had gone outside and they had kind of, I don't know, gotten their senses enough to realize that they'd been disarmed. And so one of the men pulled out a gun and threatened her. Standing there with a flintlock, she shot two of the Tories and held the other three at bay until the men got there. And the problem is the guys couldn't tell which way she was going to shoot because they were looking at her cross eyes and they didn't know where she was aiming. When the men got there, they said, "These men should die by firing squad." She said, "That's too good for them." She insisted that they hang them in her backyard, and she actually stood there whistling Yankee Doodle while the men dangled on the rope. Nancy Hart. Have you ever heard of Nancy? Thank God for our founding mothers. How about this story from the Battle of Fort Washington, November the 16th, 1776. 600 Americans were defending Fort Washington in North Manhattan, so you can see this is in modern-day New York City, against 4,000 Hessian soldiers. Now, I don't know how much you know about the Hessian soldiers, but they were German mercenaries that had been brought over by the British. They'd brought about 50,000 of them over to the colonies. These men were trained soldiers, and they were ruthless on the battlefield. And one of the reasons that the British brought them over was to terrorize the colonists. And so the colonists, with good reason, feared these Hessians because their reputation was known world over. In fact, I tell the story when I do the Black Robe presentation about a preacher named John Rossbrook, who was actually killed by a squad of Hessians while he was attempting to surrender. So that gives you an idea of how ruthless these men were. Now, notice there's 4,000 Hessians, 600 Americans. Well, I mentioned earlier Margaret Corbin. Well, she and her husband, John, much like Mary and William Hayes, were actually manning one of the two cannons that the colonists had as they fought the Hessians. Eventually, John fell, and then Margaret continued firing, just like Molly Pitcher had, Mary Hayes, until finally she was also seriously wounded. Those around her took such note in her bravery and her commitment to liberty that she became the first woman in U.S. history to receive a pension from Congress for military service. Yet most of us have never heard of Margaret Corbin. How about these two sisters-in-law? Grace and Rachel Martin. Grace and Rachel Martin lived in South Carolina at a place called 96, South Carolina. They had married two brothers And so these two young girls were sisters-in-law, both being married to a pair of brothers. Well, their husbands are off fighting with General Nathaniel Greene. And so these two young ladies, because Grace was only 16 years old when this event occurs, heard that some British couriers were going to be coming through their little community. So on April the 15th, 1780, they disguised themselves as Continental soldiers and set an ambush for the couriers. As the couriers approached, they jumped out of the weeds and the trees into the road and at gunpoint demanded that these couriers surrender their military papers. Now, you got to remember that in those days, military papers were prime reconnaissance and vital information. And so it was a big deal to be able to capture these papers. Well, the men wanted to retaliate, but these girls had gotten the jump on them and wearing their husband's clothes, they initially thought they were men. And so they didn't open fire and they actually surrendered the papers. The girls took the papers, ran back off into the woods. They immediately gave those papers to someone who could take them to the Continental Army. They proved to be very valuable in the war effort. They switched their husband's clothes back off and put on dresses, went back to their mother-in-law's house, which of course was the mother of the two brothers they had married, and you'll never believe who was there. The British couriers they had just robbed on the road. But the couriers didn't recognize them because now they're wearing dresses and they look like young ladies. And so they sat there and snickered to themselves in the room as they dined with the three British officers they had just robbed. Thank God for the courage of people like Grace and Rachel Martin. Just 16. Well, in our second war of independence, called the War of 1812... President James Madison, who was our fourth president, was then in the White House. He was married to Dolly Madison. Dolly Madison was not known for cupcakes and fried pies in those days, but she was a fiery individual and a very public person and very gregarious to the point that she was actually able to arrange meetings between political rivals so they could actually talk about their differences without throwing things at each other. So she became very well known and very useful to President James Madison. Well, on August the 24th, 1814, now we're fighting the British in our second war of independence. The British actually occupied Washington, D.C., ransacked and burned the Capitol. You may know that there was a painting in the White House, painted by Gilbert Stuart, which has become a very famous portrait of George Washington, of course, valued greatly in those days. Dolly Madison refused, she refused to leave the White House with her own bodily safety in doubt until they were able to get ladders and remove that very large picture carefully and wrap it up and get it out of the White House. And today we still have that portrait of George Washington because of the courage of people like Dolly Madison. Well, of course, you know that we won the War of 1812. And eventually, as we all do, Dolly and James began to age and James died. Molly eventually moved back to Washington in 1844 and became the leader of the women and really the leader of society in Washington. She was hailed as basically the only living connection to the actual founders or framers of our republic. She remained very active publicly and gave guidance to other presidents' wives, like President Polk's wife, Tyler's wife, Julia, President Polk's wife, Sarah. When she passed away at age 81, she was eulogized by President Zachary Taylor as the country's first lady, believed to be the first known public reference to the term that we're so familiar with today. And we've now since called every president's wife the first lady. Dolly Madison was the first lady as we know it, because she had the courage to stand up and say, no. I'm not leaving until that portrait is off the wall and safely out of here. And so many other things that she did. Now, you may be sitting there right now saying, well, Dan, other than for the historical knowledge, is there any spiritual benefit that we can gain from knowing stories like these? Well, first of all, it's Mother's Day. And so I think these kinds of stories would indicate to us the importance of the faith and the courage of women among us. And as I told you at the beginning, men like Charles Spurgeon, and I could chime right in, are willing to admit that there's no way that we could ever say enough about the impact that faithful mothers and grandmothers and great-grandmothers have had in our own lives. But you know, God has a lot to say about heritage. In fact, God is a God of heritage. From the very beginning in the garden, when God told Adam and Eve, now look, it's not good for you two to be separate. And so he performed the first wedding. And the way I know that is because Jesus said it. When Jesus was asked about marriage, he said, well, from the beginning, God made them male and female and said, it's not good for you to be alone. So you need to come together and become one. This was God's plan all the way. And then he said, now be fruitful and multiply. And we know for a fact that they immediately began to teach the plan of salvation to their children that God had illustrated to them when he had to slay animals to make clothing of skins. You remember that they had to wear? This is how Abel knew to give a blood sacrifice and why Cain was without excuse when he offered vegetables and fruits. This is why God rejected Cain's offering. It wasn't that it wasn't his best. It wasn't a blood sacrifice. You say, how did they know? Because God had taught Adam and Eve in the garden. And he had told them, now pass it down. Pass it down. And God's plan was that every set of parents would pass their faith to their children. And if they were able to live long enough, then they could continue to pass their faith to their grandchildren. But now their children would pass their faith to their children. And then if these parents were blessed to live long enough that they were great grandparents, they'd pass their faith to their great grandchildren. And their parents passed their faith, and then their grandparents. You see what God's plan was? This is why the culture that we live in today that so devalues marriage, where over one in two marriages ends in divorce, where we have homosexuality and lesbianism being elevated to more special status, transsexualism in every perverted way you can imagine. You realize what all of this is. This is an all-out attack of the enemy on the very essence of who we are. And you realize when we lose mothers, and we lose motherhood as that honorable position that God has created. We lose that tie to the next generation and ultimately truth and faith and courage. It's lost. So you remember when the Israelites crossed the Jordan River and they're moving into the promised land. God said, now look, I want you to go set up a memorial made out of these 12 big stones. And the reason is simple. In Joshua chapter 4, verse 21 through 24 tells us, when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what are these stones? Then you shall let your children know, saying, Israel crossed over this Jordan on dry land, for the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up before us until we had crossed over. That all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. You see, God's plan was that those stones would be a marker so that years later, when daddies and mamas would take their little kids back to where they crossed, the kids would say, Mama, Daddy, what is this? Kids, sit down. I need to tell you a story. Friday and Saturday, we had the privilege of keeping our daughter's children. Three precious gifts that God has given us, Lucy, Wyatt, and Titus. Rebecca and Tony were celebrating their 10th wedding anniversary, which is just impossible for me to believe that it's been that long. But we were able, Friday and Saturday, as we do very often, pass little pieces of who we are to them. to pass the heritage from one generation to the next, so that truth and continuity and salvation will not be lost. So that when they say, well, what is this? Kids, sit down. I need to tell you a story. This is why God is so concerned about the passing of faith from one generation to the next. And I know that you've heard the illustration many times about relay runners and how no matter how fast the relay team is, if they fumble the baton pass, they typically lose the race. And if you look around you, friends, we're fumbling the pass in this culture. We are not faithfully passing our faith to our children and our grandchildren. I've even heard people say, well, now that I have my kids raised, my job is finished. No, my friend, your job continues on. You have grandchildren coming or already have them. And I'm telling you, to be able to spend time with those little guys is one of the greatest blessings of my whole life. It's like I've told you over and over, and if I'd known they were so good, I'd have had them first instead of my kids. I'm telling you, they're much, much better. I can spoil them. I can treat them like I wouldn't have never treated my own children, but I can treat them this way. But now I realize what time does. And I realize what a godless culture does. And I realize how important it is that I pass my faith to that next generation of little ones. Deuteronomy 4, that's why God says, take heed to yourself, diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. You teach them to your children and your grandchildren. In Deuteronomy 6, verses 6 through 9, he says, look, you need to write this stuff down. Write it on your house. Write it on your doorpost. Put it on something and wear it around your head. Put it on your wrists. Let your family know your story. But not just your story, how your story by faith has been infused into his story. That's why history is important. And our children these days are drifting in a sea of godlessness with no connection. The majority of children are being born today without two parents. Now we know they had two parents somewhere along the way, but they're being raised by single moms or single dads. And God bless those who found themselves in that kind of situation. And you're doing the very best that you can. God bless you. But friends, there's something wrong with a culture that becomes the norm. It's the enemy's way to saw off these generations so that they're not connected to grandma and grandpa. They're not connected to great grandma and great grandpa. When was the last time that you took your children or your grandchildren, took them back to where you and your wife went to school, or where you met, or where you went to college, or where you engaged? My daughter and Tony were married out in our front yard. That's what my daughter always wanted. And every time that we're out riding the four-wheeler with her children, when we go around that way, they make me stop and they say, I know what happened right there. Because I've told them many times, that's where I stood there and I married your mom and daddy. They must have these connections. This is why Paul said to Timothy in 2 Timothy, Timothy was starting to get fearful and his knees were getting weak and he was watching what was happening to Paul. And it appears that Timothy was beginning to kind of consider throwing in the towel or at least backing off. And so Paul is writing Timothy saying, Timothy, don't quit. Don't quit. And he says, I can remember the genuine faith that is in you, which was first in your grandmother Lois and then was in your mother Eunice. And I'm persuaded that same faith is in you. Now notice what he says in verse 6. Therefore, I remind you to stir up the gift of God which is in you through the laying on of my hands. Notice what he's saying there. Timothy, you're not the beginning or the end, buddy. You're in a long line. Your grandmother, your mother, you, and those who will follow you. Stir up this gift. Friends, you know what you and I need to do? We need to find a moment today Doesn't take very long. Just get off for a moment and say, God, stir up this gift in me. God, remind me of how important this connection is to this next generation and to the following generation. Friends, do you realize that this connects us to our ancestors? Now, I'm not talking about ancestral worship. I'm talking about the line of faith that goes all the way back. You see, by our being faithful, it didn't begin with us, and it won't end with us. But we're a part of this long story. And we're losing that in America today. We need to store up our gifts. I want to tell you one last story, and then we'll be done. One last founding mother. Her name was Prudence Wright. She was married to David Wright. Her maiden name was Cummings, and so most people know her as Prudence Cummings Wright. She and David lived in Pepperell, Massachusetts. Now, like some of the stories that I've told you today, which were very common, David was all fighting for independence. So Prudence, being a fighter herself, organized somewhere between 30 and 40 women of Pepperell together, and the women called themselves the Prudence Wright Guard. And what they intended to do was to defend their little community. Because you got to remember, with the men gone away, that left little defense for bad guys or for the Tories. You've already seen with Nancy Hart, her husband was gone. The five Tories came in. Who knows what kind of meanness they planned. Of course, she cut that short with her cross-eyed shooting. But still. And so she organized these women into the Prudence Wright Guard. Well, she was away visiting her mother, and she heard a man named Samuel and another man named Leonard Whiting talking about how they were going to be passing through Pepperell with some very important military papers. Samuel was a Tory. Leonard Whiting was actually Captain Leonard Whiting, and he was a British officer. So she went back home, and she realized that those two would have to pass over the river Jewett's Bridge. So she gathered together her little guard and she said, we're going to set up a little party for these two as they come through, a little reception party. And so those women put on, like Grace and Rachel Martin did in a previous story, those women put on their husband's clothes and they hid beside not this exact bridge, but this is a reproduction copy of this bridge. It's called Jewett's Bridge. They hid right over in the trees, either on this side or this side, with pitchforks, torches, wearing their husband's clothes in the dark with lanterns and these torches. And their plan was, is once those two, the Tory and the British officer, began to cross this bridge, they would hear the clump, 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 clump of the horse hooves hitting that wooden deck. They would jump out of the trees and ambush them. And that is exactly what they did. They jumped out of the trees. They had their pitchforks. They had their torches, their lanterns. They were wearing men's clothing. And you can just imagine in the dark of night, not like we have today with street lights everywhere. In the dark of night, these two are startled. They see these what appear to be men. They're holding pitchforks and torches. Who knows, maybe a few of them had firearms. And all of a sudden, they're caught, just like in the previous story with Grace and Rachel Martin. Well, Prudence spoke up for the group and she demanded their surrender. We will take you as prisoners and we want your papers. Well, Colonel Whiting decided that he'd just pull his pistol and ride his way through there. But Samuel, who happened to be Prudence's brother, who was a Tory, said to Captain Whiting, wait just a minute, Captain. He said, I recognize Prue's voice, and she would wade through blood for the rebel cause. You better think again. And those women actually captured those two men, and they're out on the internet, if you want to go look for them, there are pen and ink drawings of Prudence with these two men tied to a tree. They've pulled their boots off because that's where they often carried their important papers, down in their boots. And there she is searching one of those boots of those men and found those papers. The next morning, marched those two men to the Continental Army nearest them, turned them in as prisoners of war, and turned in those papers. One of her own brother. Broke her heart, but he was a Tory. And they told them, they said, we'll let you live under one condition. The army said, you have to leave this country and never return. And they said, you'll never hear from us again. And as far as we know, they never were heard from again. Today, beside the rebuilt Jewish bridge, there's that little stone marker telling the story of what Prudence Wright and her guard did. Now, some of you who were here 4 years ago know what I'm about to do. But Pam and I are fortunate that we have David and Prudence Wright's flintlock musket. This is theirs. Now, I don't know whether he used a Continental Army musket or took this one to war, but if he used a Continental musket, there's the possibility that she had this the night that she ambushed and captured old Samuel and Captain Whiting. When you come up here later and you hold it, if you turn it in the light just right on the plate opposite the lock, you can see David Wright, Brookline Militia, because he was initially a part of the Brookline Militia. This was their musket. So we're going to close this service in just a moment. But ladies, I want to invite you to come up here and get your picture made with Prudence Wright's flintlock musket. Now you guys, back off. This is for the gals. In the first service, they were lined up all the way down that aisle and all the way across here taking pictures. So I want you ladies to be able to get your picture made holding the very musket that may have been there that night in April of 1775. We don't know whether this event happened before the battles of Lexington and Concord or shortly afterwards, but this was in April of 1775. This was their flintlock musket. And you say, well, Dan, why put so much emphasis on this kind of stuff? Why is this so important? Well, this is why Proverbs 22:28 says, do not remove the ancient landmark which your fathers have set. And yet that's exactly what we've done. Even well-meaning families have lost their heritage. We no longer go back to the old home place. It's really kind of a shame that we buy and sell houses so often these days. See, when I was a kid, my grandparents lived where they'd lived since they'd been married. On Sunday afternoons, we'd go over and visit the old home place where my great-grandparents, like the Trotters, where they lived. When I was a baby, my parents would go over there on a Sunday and visit with my great-grandparents. I don't remember them, but they held me. And so even as a boy, years later, when the Trotters were long gone, we'd go over there and we'd look at that old house. I took my brothers over there the other day. A few weeks ago, we were over in Arkansas, and I don't know that they could have found it without me. The old place has grown up. The house is gone. We've lost our connection to our heritage. So one of these days, my grandchildren, the three I kept this week, Lucy and Wyatt and Titus, are going to ask me about this. And I'm going to say, kids, sit down. I've got a story to tell you. We all have a story, and our kids desperately need to hear it. Moms, grandmas, great-grandmas, push the legacy on. Push it on. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to have a time of invitation. We're going to sing and we're going to pray. And then, ladies, I really am serious. I want you to come up here and I want you to pull out your cell phone. So right now, get out those cell phones right now. Set them on camera. Now, ladies, if you don't have yours, then hit the gorilla in the ribs next to you and get him to get his out. He probably already does. He's surfing the internet right now while I'm talking. So get his phone. And in just a minute, I want you to come up here and I want you to hold this and touch your history. But some of you may not know the Lord. And if you don't know Jesus, friend, then you need to be set free internally. See, external liberty is important, but being set free from your sins is the most important thing. There are going to be some counselors up here to share with you how you can give your life to Jesus. If you're a believer and you're not passing the legacy on intentionally, maybe you need to come and get on your knees and say, God, help me to start burning some midnight oil. And maybe you need to join this church. Maybe you've just become a Christian, or maybe you've moved into this area, or maybe this is the kind of church you've been looking for. Whatever it is, you come. These counselors are going to be standing here. So guys, if you'll go ahead and come and find your places, I'm going to pray. We're going to sing. Because it's always the right time to come to Jesus. I don't care where you are, what's going on. It's always the right time.